Welcome, fans, to another very special episode of Rangers Ed. Very proud to announce we have NHL Network analyst EJ Hradek with us today. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to join you. I met some of you at the Garden on a couple of occasions, and now I'm getting the whole crew here. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, we had Coach Ed hunt him down at the Garden and pressure him to join the podcast.
Yeah, me and Coach were stalking them a little bit, the whole crew, and decided to interrupt their combo.
Yeah, you got Jameson Coyle that night, I think. Mike Kelly was there. Yeah, we had a little of everything.
Well, we wanted to land the big fish first, so now maybe we'll go after the little guys.
You couldn't get Jackie Redmond, I guess, so here I am.
Oh, well, I haven't tried yet.
All right.
Well,
okay.
We wanted to wait for you to finish your popcorn and soda first, too, before we attacked you. So.
Hey, listen, you could be waiting a long time. You know, I go through those boxes of popcorn pretty quick. So, you know,
when me and Eddie met you last year, the thing that amazed me is, first of all, I watch NHL Network probably too much.
Yeah.
And when we saw you and Reeder in the hallway, we're like, it was one other guy talking to you, but we recognized you guys immediately.
Yeah,
and like people seem to just walk by and not even, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, hey, listen, sometimes you get noticed, sometimes you don't. Sometimes people will send me a note and they say, I saw you at the game and I didn't want to bother you. And I'm like, bother me? I mean, this is what I do for a living, is talk about hockey. And so very, very lucky. I've always felt very, very, very lucky to be doing what I do. And I've always had a passion for hockey. Even at this late stage, I still play hockey. And so anytime anybody sees me at a game, if they want to say hi, I'm happy to talk. So, you know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Yeah. And just to see you online at the concessions, I'm like, why is he on a regular line? Isn't there like a private network?
He's just one of the guys.
You want the scoop on that whole thing now is that in the old days, and I've been going to Madison Square Garden, you know, for 20, 30 years as a media member. And it used to be the media room. At first, it was like upstairs on the sixth floor, which is kind of that main concourse, that first concourse area. And then they got moved downstairs. And that would be where your media would come in, and we would come in and we would, you know, be able to have a meal. And eventually, first it was, you know, it was gratis. And then eventually it was like you paid for the meal, like whatever was a small fee. And then after COVID, they decided to do away with that, and they just gave media members like a coupon for, like, I think it's $25 that you could use at the stands. So whenever I come, a lot of times I come right from work. I come in, I get my little coupon, I go in, I have a hot dog, I have a Diet Coke, and I'm going to maybe a popcorn. I'm good to go. But that's why all the guys are now on the regular stand. They don't have that area where we used to, like a media room to eat.
Wow. So even Sam Rosen has to go to the concession stand?
Well, Sam Rosen gets there so early. I mean, I think that Sam probably has his own routine, you know, where he eats at a certain time. You know, when you're doing the broadcast, I go, I'm there to watch the game, take notes, talk to some people. You know, it's a little bit of a different experience. When I go, you know, when I have to go and I'm on, you know, on the broadcast or in some other capacity, you know, then I think you plan your day differently. You know, like I'll call the Stanley Cup final again this year for NHL International, which is like kind of a great opportunity for me. Unfortunately, it doesn't get seen here in the US or Canada, but you know, in other places around the world, you get to hear that call. I do it with Kevin Weeks the last couple of years. And in that scenario, you know, I plan on my day different. And so, yeah, I'll eat earlier in the day. So I'm sure for Sam and for Joe and the guys who are doing the games, they have a whole different routine.
Well, congratulations on that. That's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
it's proud of that.
Thank you. Yeah, I am. It's been nice. I've been loving calling games. I'm calling more games. And I'm hopeful to call the World Junior Championships this year in December. And it's an event that I've covered going back to my time at ESPN. And I called it 2 years ago when it was moved into the summer months because of a COVID stoppage. But I'll be really excited to call it this year if that does happen in December in the normal time of year when it occurs, because we get a big audience for that. Everybody's, you know, Team USA is the home team here. And so it's great. It'll be a lot of fun for me to have that opportunity.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
That's great. Yeah, that's a big important tournament too. That's a good opportunity for you.
Yep.
So the international, you said the Stanley Cup Finals internationally, is that everywhere outside of the U.S. and Canada?
What happens is we do a broadcast, and like again, Kevin Weeks and I will do it, and it gets pushed out on the satellite all over the globe, and like different countries take it. Some take our broadcast straight. Some will put subtitles. Some will dub over it in their own language. I think in Finland, I think they have their own guys maybe in a studio in Finland that dub over it. So it just depends on where you are in the world. So you may hear me and Kevin. You may hear me and Kevin and see subtitles in a different language, or you may hear somebody completely different. But I think it's broadcast in, you know, I think 100 or so countries around the globe. So it's fun for me, awesome. But it's, you know, unfortunately, I don't get a lot of feedback because it's not here. Like when I do the Saturday, we have the NHL Network showcase games that we do out of our studio in Secaucus on Saturday afternoons. And like those are broadcast here in the United States, except in the local market. So people see those and you get feedback from people. So, but it's fun to do, and to call a Stanley Cup final is pretty exciting. This will be, I think, my fourth one. So I'm looking forward to it.
That's really cool. I had no idea that I guess it makes sense, but I didn't know they did that.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe I have to try and find a link online somewhere where I can.
Well, if you find it, let me know.
Well, Cousin Ed's got family in Peru. Mikey over right. Has family in Romania. So maybe we could work something out.
We got Gaza, right?
We'll get some footage.
Yeah,
funny.
A few of our fans live in England as well, and Germany.
There you go. My brother married a girl from Peru, so that's recently.
That's what I did.
There you go.
So did
there you go. There you go. Apparently, that's a good idea. So, yeah. Good luck.
I need it.
We all do. We all do.
So EJ, you grew up in New York, right?
Grew up in Westchester County, like in southern. Westchester, Yonkers, Eastchester, Tuckahoe area. I went to Tuckahoe High School, and
grew up in that area. Who'd you root for?
You're familiar with Murray's, huh?
Yo, I'm very familiar with EJ Murray's. They're up on the top of the hill in Yonkers, and the same garbage that was there in 1981 is there now. I think it's like
it's a little better.
Corner. It's funny. I always make that joke, and then somebody told me recently that it looks really. They really cleaned it up. So I guess I should stop making that joke. But it was the first place that I ever played. I think was Murray's.
Now there's plexiglass, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I remember the fence.
I think the Rangers may have fixed it up a little bit, but
I think you're right. I've seen the Rangers have events there. And it's really good because, I mean, Yonkers is it's just outside of New York. It's a big city, a big suburb, and it's good to have, when I was growing up, I was in the mid-70s, early to mid-70s when I was a boy into my early teenage years. I mean, there weren't a lot of rinks. That's why I'm always amazed whenever I think about Joey Mullen and Brian Mullen, making the NHL and going to the Hall of Fame and Brian having a great career himself. Like I think about in that era, there weren't a lot of hockey rinks in this area. So, I mean, for those guys to get all the way to the highest level and for Joey to make it to the Hall of Fame and score 500 goals, I mean, it's just, to me, it blows me away because I know what the situation was at that time. And it was not like today. That's for sure.
No, definitely the Olympics in 1980 and the Islanders set off that boom, I believe.
Yeah, it had that had little to do with it for sure. And for me, you guys asked about who I rooted for, so I'll give you the story, and you guys will not like this story, but I'll give it to you anyway. And because I know this is another one of those stories, I was about 8, so that would have been like 1968, 69. I sent $5 in the mail to the New York Rangers for what was called the Rangers Blue Book, which was like a little bit of a media guide of sorts, right? It was a yearbook and, primitive kind of by today's standards, but it was something they put out every year. And I said, so here I am, young boy, 8 years old, $5 bill in an envelope off to the Rangers. Of course, nobody tells you when you're 8 that, like, don't put money in the mail. because, you know, people just take the money. And so I never got the blue book. And I always joke after that, I held a grudge. And so I, when the Islanders came into existence,
I jumped
on the Islander bandwagon, and, you know, they were terrible for the first couple of years, but then they got going, and I was, you know, I was lucky because then I was an Islander fan and they won, you know, they had a bunch of cups. And then I got into the, once I got into the business, that kind of faded for me just because I felt like, you know, there's some, it's kind of weird now. Like the guys that get in the business now, there is more people that are, that maintain their fandom. And I guess that's fine, but I guess I grew up in a little bit of a different era. And I felt like, especially because I was covering it nationally for ESPN and then for NHL Network, that I had to have, you know, I needed to be a fair arbiter of what goes on. So if I, you know, it's good if fans never know, you know, if they think I'm rooting for one team or not rooting for another team, that's probably good because I'm giving them my fair opinion. And sometimes they agree and sometimes they don't. So that's kind of the way I look at it. But, you know, it's funny. All in this area, I have Islander fans who think I'm a Ranger fan. I have Devils fans who think I'm an Islander fan. I have, Ranger fans who think I root for the other teams. I mean, it's kind of crazy. But I was a big, big Islander fan as a kid into probably my early 20s. And then once I got into the business, it started to, you know, things started to change.
Well, now I remember you're gonna have Coach Ed yelling at the TV every time you're talking about the Islanders or the Rangers. So
yeah.
Revealed your secret.
Yeah, well, I remember it's all right. I don't hide it. I don't hide it. I mean, but because it's in one of my bios somewhere, and
yeah,
you know, I don't tell that story all the time about the blue book, but I think it's a funny story because, you know, here I am, a silly 8-year-old kid. I don't know any better, and you know, let's face it, we all hold grudges. You know,
maybe we got to get you that blue book and just switch over.
1968, if you could, you know.
Deal.
I think Arnie Brown was on the Rangers then.
I might have one of those in my attic because my father, I inherited a bunch of programs and stuff. I got to try to look.
You got to see. You might have one. You might have what I've been looking for the last 55 years.
Being that you're talking about how you are always so fair, even though I do feel that sometimes you're a little anti-Ranger for some reason, so now I know that answer.
I would say this about you know, the fairness question. We're all human beings, right? And we all have little biases, but mine are not with teams. Like, I would say if I was critical of myself, human being, there are people that you like. And you root for them and you want them to do well. And it's hard to be critical. You know, like a guy like Gerard Gallant, for example, is a likable guy. And so, you know, it's kind of odd that he got fired after two really good years. But it was pretty clear to those of us kind of in the know that he was not on good terms with, you know, Chris Drury. For whatever the reason, they had lost confidence, even though the team had played well for under his tutelage. And he was going to move out. So it's kind of, you know, those are the things, you know, people you like, you tend to maybe give a little bit more benefit of the doubt to. And that's just me being honest with you guys. And I think that's the case for most people, right? Guys you like, I'm sure you guys give a little bit more leeway to. And guys that you're not as crazy about for whatever reason, you're more willing to be critical.
Nah, never. We don't do that.
I'll fall into that category. I think me and Coach Ed are on the opposite sides, and then we need little Ed in there to kind of play the voice of reason with us sometimes.
What I was getting at though was that you guys all do. I mean, I don't. There's not one guy on the NHL Network that I don't feel is fair, and I the way you guys give opinions of situations and players and coaches, I think it's very logical and honest. There's not a host or anybody that I go, what is he talking about? You know,
we try our best with that stuff. I mean, and I always feel like I'm speaking to a national audience. So I just try to, you know, play it straight down the middle, give you my two cents. I may, you know, we may disagree, but that's the beauty of, you know, sports fans is right. Like sports fans are passionate. That's why that they love it so much. That's why, you know, you guys are doing what you're doing with the podcast, why people listen. I mean, why I've been fortunate enough to do what I do, because sports fans are passionate. They have opinions. We don't always all agree, but, you know, I'm willing to listen, and I'm always willing to kind of give you my two cents. It's a good dialogue because sometimes I learn something. And I know when I talk to guys like you that watch the Rangers really more closely than I do, because I have to try to watch 32 teams. I try to listen to kind of your thoughts, because then if it's something that strikes me, I'm going to go back and, like, you know, think about that, because, you know, you just, when you're watching 32 teams, you just can't know every single thing about every team, especially the way that a smart fan paying attention to their team does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that at some point. It's gotta be hard to cover the ins and outs of all 32 teams on a daily basis. I mean, it's really hard to even cover one team like us in this podcast, which obviously isn't NHL Network. Right. Yeah. So it's gotta be hard. I mean, do you guys, how do you do that? I mean, how do you,
well, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's years of, first of all, it's years of experience, right? I mean, that I've been doing it for a long time. And so players stay in the league. And so you have, you know, new guys come in, older guys leave. So you have that experience that you have, you start with that, right? And I always say, like, you know, people will say, well, what do you work? Like, you know, what are your hours like? What's your day like? And I'm always like, listen, I'm always in that boiling water, so to speak. I'm always in that pot. Where, like, at any time during the day, I'm thinking about it, I'm watching it, I'm talking about it, whether I'm doing the show, whether I'm driving in, whether I'm driving back, whether I'm at home watching the games, watching the late games. I happen to be kind of a night owl, so I watch the West Coast games more than I even watch the East Coast games, because I have a bit of a drive from Secaucus to where I live. And so it's, you know, you're always thinking about it. You're always watching. You're always, like, with social media now, you're always getting updates on Twitter or different social platforms. And so it's kind of around the clock. You're thinking about it, and then we go in, we have research people that give us research packets. We have that to look forward to and to lean on as colleagues. We talk to one another, and, you know, Jackie and I are constantly, like, texting about different things and different games and stuff like that, because we've been working together for 6-7 years now. So I think it's all that stuff that comes into it, and phone calls with, you know, when I call different people, media members, people, you know, coaches, you know, so that's kind of how it all works. But, you know, in the end, you just have to, I mean, you just try to pay as much attention as you can, because you just can't, you know everything, the third line player on the, you know, the Anaheim Ducks when their team is struggling this year and out of the mix. So you try to pick it up as best you can as it goes along, and, you know, and just try to deal with it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, you got a lot of experience in that. I want to take you back to something you said earlier. I don't want to jump around too much, but you did Gallant, you liked Gallant, and, you know, it was clear to you that Drury wanted to get rid of Gallant. So before I lost that, I wanted to ask you, you know, we saw your thing on NHL Network. For the fans that didn't see it, you know, you should see the clip where I think you were talking about his breakup day comments.
Yeah.
And you were saying that, you know, you're not being hard on him, but it's just clear to you guys in the media that that's what was happening. Cause maybe Gallant got a little defensive against the media. So did you guys, like, hear things from sources about that, or how did you, what made it clear to you that,
well, you know, Gallant, I mean, I heard from, I don't know what the riff was about. So I'm not going to come on here and tell you guys, I know it was this or this. I have no idea what it was about. You'd have to get them to, you know, give the truth theorem to guys to give you the honest
never gonna
answer.
Happen.
And that's never hard to get. It's hard to get that. The bottom line to me was that I had heard from very good sources back in November that the Rangers were making phone calls looking to speak with coaches. And this is the process. Whenever you're looking to move on from a coach, it doesn't happen like that day. You don't fire the guy that day and then go, oh, let me think who's available. What happens is when you start thinking about it, you call, if a coach is not under contract, you can just call his agent or call the coach directly. If a coach is still under contract, you know, for example, like Barry Trotz last year still had a year left on his Islander contract, right? So if you wanted to talk to Barry Trotz, you had to call the Island to get permission to speak with him. So it was my understanding that the Rangers were making those type of phone calls. And it was, again, a pretty good source that that was the case. And you guys remember the Rangers, I think it was the weekend they lost at home back-to-back days. They lost to Ottawa, I think, on Friday night, and Chicago maybe on a Saturday night. And
yep.
Trouba threw the helmet and that whole thing. And,
oh, yeah.
And they got turned around. But if that team would have maybe lost four of their next six and seemed like they were not moving forward, I think it was very conceivable that they would have made a change right then, which is, and it was one of those things that I had to go back to the well on, because I was like, the guy just got you to the Final Four. And I like, it's, this is not making, this is not adding up that they would want to move on from a guy literally 2.5 months into a new season after being one of the Final Four teams and being six wins away from a Stanley Cup. But nonetheless, that's what it was. And I think that whenever management loses confidence in a coach, I think it really behooves them to make the change, because like the scenario that could have unfolded here is that the Rangers could have decided we're going to wait on Gallant. We have our reservations, but we're going to wait. You start the season, you play the first, 10 games, the Rangers go 2-8. Now you fired Girard then. You thought you wanted to fire him like 6 months ago. You have to bring in somebody at that time. It's a scramble. So I think whenever a team loses confidence in a coach, it's probably best to try to move in another direction. But it doesn't mean that Girard did not do a really good job. I thought he did a good job. The record speaks for itself. It was disappointing to lose to the Devils. There's a lot of reasons why these things happen in the playoffs. I mean, the Boston Bruins had an unbelievable year this year, and, they lose in the first round as well. So hockey's it's a game of a lot of randomness. As you guys know, being fans over many years, and goaltending is important, injuries, matchups, all these things come into play in the postseason. So at the end of the day, to the clip that you're probably referencing is like, Girard was giving it to the media a little bit, like, but my point was nobody was making that up. Nobody wanted to go to Girard and ask those questions. But out there through a number of sources, when I went to the game, when I saw you guys that night in the press area with other media members, everybody was well aware of there was an issue. And so at the end of the day, this is how it played out. And so Girard did a great, in my opinion, Girard, I thought, had a really good 2 years with the Rangers. He did a lot of good things. Players played very well under him. But in the end, the management decided that they wanted to go in another direction, and they're entitled to do that. And it doesn't mean that Girard's not a good coach and likely get another opportunity at somewhere down the road. And I'm sure he'll do pretty well again.
EJ, yeah. When something like that happens, I mean, I understand you guys have your sources, but like,
yeah.
How does Gallant not hear the rumblings back in November? Or did he?
Well,
or does he?
He probably has an inkling, I would think. I mean, it's hard for me to say. That's a question you'd have to ask Girard. You'd have to ask any of these coaches. But a lot of times, they're aware that things are not going well. I remember the year the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup. If you guys remember, that was the year that, Barry Trotz felt he was basically going to be replaced at the end of the year, no matter how things played out. And in fact, they won the Stanley Cup, and they did not offer him the contract he wanted, and he left, and he went to the Islanders. So a lot of times I think the coaches know, but, they know this is what comes with the territory, and if they have that feeling, their job is just get the team ready day after day and try to have success. And, it's funny, this is a weird business. I remember talking to Neil Smith one time and about, like, you can be on the bubble as a manager or a coach and be right on the doorstep of being fired, and then you get a win on a certain night, and then your team gets hot, and then maybe you're there for another 10 years.
Winning solves everything.
It's a crazy business in that regard. I mean, I know the year the Bruins won the cup in 2011, I mean, they were ready to move on from Claude Julien, I think, who was the coach of that team, and make changes, and then the Bruins, they rallied in the first round series to beat Montreal, and then I think they might have swept Philly. Then it was a 7-game series with Tampa, and then another 7-game series with Vancouver. But they went on to win the cup, and Claude Julien was the coach of the Bruins for another 6-7 years. So it's a crazy business. It's a winning business, and in the end, Matt, I always, like I said at the start, when management loses confidence in someone, it probably behooves them to make a change, just because if you're going to do it eventually, you might as well do it when you think the time is right.
Did you ever get into the business side of the game other than the media? I thought I read somewhere that you were a scout in the 90s.
Yeah,
actually.
I scouted for the Dallas Stars for like 2.5 years. And the story there was I moved to Texas to work for a magazine called Beckett Hockey Monthly, which was more of a collectibles magazine. Yeah, exactly. That was what it was. And they were doing the time, there was a sports card boom. And so they were doing a magazine for all the four major sports, and they were based in Dallas, Texas. And it was hard for them to get someone that had any kind of hockey background to go there, because the Dallas Stars were not there at that time. And they were still in Minnesota North Stars. So I was young in my career and looking for opportunity. And I went down and interviewed, and long story short, I got the job. And then a couple of years later, the Dallas Stars arrived, right? They came from Minnesota. They moved down there. So it was a fortuitous situation for me, being a guy who was a big hockey guy, to be in a market where there was very few media people who knew anything about hockey. So I ended up doing a radio show, and I got to end up getting to know Bob Gainey and his group, which was Doug Armstrong, who's now in St. Louis, and Craig Button, who's now on TSN and was the general manager of the Calgary Flames, and Les Jackson, who was a longtime management guy. I think he's doing work for the Florida Panthers now. So I got to know all these guys. And I was planning on moving back to New York in 96. And the Stars had made a trade. They traded Mark Tenorti for Kevin Hatcher. So I don't know how, you know, Coach Ed, you would remember these players. I'm not sure if I'm dating myself too much. But
I remember them.
The bottom line was Kevin Hatcher was a good offensive defenseman with Washington. He bounced around a little bit. He went to Pittsburgh. And then he went to Washington. Then he went to Dallas from there. But Mark Tenorti was a heart and soul, tough defenseman. I believe he was a Rangers draft pick and played with the Rangers originally. And but he was kind of a little bit broken down at that point of his career. And it was like two teams making trades that, you know, the Stars wanted Kevin Hatcher because they had Darian Hatcher. They thought we have the brothers together. And Washington was looking to change their mix on defense. The bottom line of all that was, talking to friends of mine in New York, they were like, why would you trade for Kevin Hatcher? He's kind of at the end, which he was. He went to Dallas and didn't play very well. And they eventually ended up moving him, and it was good for them. They moved to Pittsburgh for Sergei Zubov, and that was really good for the Dallas Stars. But my feeling was, like, I went to the Stars manager, Les Jackson, who was the guy I dealt with, and I said, you know, I'm moving back to New York, and you guys don't see all the games. I'm going to be back there. I'd love the opportunity to do some scouting for you. And so we talked, and I said, as I've done a couple of times in my life, I said, I'm willing to bet on myself. So, like, I'll scout for you. I'll send you the reports. Just pay my expenses, so whatever my transportation is. If I like doing it and you think I'm providing something that's useful for you, we'll keep doing it. And if not, no harm, no foul. We're all friends. So I moved back to New York. I started scouting. I did pro scouting, did Rangers, Islanders, Devils, Flyers, a lot of the minor league teams. It was the Philadelphia Phantoms at that time. I probably went to a couple hundred games a year and filed reports. And after about a month, Les sent me a note back and just said, I think you're doing a good job. And so I did it for like 2.5 years. And then I got the opportunity to go to ESPN Magazine. They were launching as an associate editor, kind of the number two hockey guy there. And it was just too good of an opportunity to pass up. If I was a younger person and I felt like there was a path for me to make my way in management, I would have probably done that. But I was a little bit older at that time, and I just felt like this opportunity at ESPN was one I couldn't really pass up. So once I did that, I felt it really made no sense for me to continue to scout. I mean, that's a conflict. So that's where that happened. But I did 2.5 years, and I learned an awful lot about hockey. And I talked to a lot of really great hockey people, and I learned to listen to a lot of these old-time scouts who had a lot of really good information, and it was really helpful.
So the question I have is, did you scout anybody or recommend anybody that became significant on any teams? And
conversely, the only guy that I would say, you know, when you're scouting pros, and especially someone like me, right? I'm like new, right? I'm not somebody's brought, you know, I'm not a former player. I'm not the brother of the coach or the one of the players. I don't have any of those ties, right? So I would just file reports, and like, they know the players in the league at this time. In the mid to late 90s, there wasn't as the accessibility of seeing all these games wasn't like it is now, where it's really easy to watch all the games. So I would say the only player that I think I had impact on Dallas ending up with was Sean Chambers, who played on the Devils, and I got to see him an awful lot. And you know, I still have my reports downstairs. I have a binder of like a couple hundred reports. And, you know, some of them I look at and I go, boy, I missed the boat on that guy. Or I'm like, oh, I was on, you know, or I was good. You know, because like, that's what it is. Like, you ask the good scouts, anybody will tell you, like, you're never right all the time, you know. And the thing I learned is that the players are always changing day to day. And, like, you have to – that's where a good scouting department is so important, because players get better and worse every single day. And you got to know where they're trending in their career anytime that you may want to bring them in. So for me, I think Sean Chambers was the only guy that I had any impact on at all. And it was just that I had done a number of reports on him and felt he would be someone that would be a good back end defenseman for the Dallas Stars. They eventually got him, and he was part of their 1999 Stanley Cup winning team. So again, I would say that's the only guy, but nice. I did a lot of reports, and I'm sure they took that for what it was worth. And some of them I'm sure they read and went like, boy, poor EJ. Is he blind? Like, you
know. Give us one like, that you missed then.
And then there are others that are like, oh, this EJ, maybe he's smart. You know, here's the one I'll tell you that I will tell you about. And it's really something I learned a lot of. Scott Niedermeyer came into the league around that time with the Devils. Now, he is a great player, right? He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of my favorite players ever to watch because he is a brilliant skater. But yeah. when I was doing the reports on him, I always wondered, like, where is the passion? Like, he doesn't look like he really has, like, this passion for the game. Like, some nights it looks like he's going through the motions. And I learned something valuable over time with that. It's like there's a saying, still waters run deep. And by that, it's like just because someone is not emoting and not acting out physically, it doesn't mean they aren't – the burning nature of them as competitors doesn't exist. And Scott Niedermeyer his competitive nature burned as bright as anyone's I've ever seen. But it took me some time to kind of understand that just because a guy's mad on the bench or acting out, that doesn't always mean everything. Sometimes it's just simply that someone is kind of, like I say, more quiet in nature. And they go about their business in a different way. And I learned that from Scott Niedermeyer.
I think that's an interesting point, because that's a criticism I hear a lot about Mika Zibanejad, that he doesn't have like emotion on the bench. If something goes bad, he has the same face as if, you know, things are going good. Yeah. But he seems to be a very competitive guy. In his interviews, he gets, you know, upset when they lose and stuff, but he doesn't really have that kind of emotion. So it's an interesting point.
Yeah. You know what? That's another good example. And, you know, that I would say no one gets to be as high end a player in this league as Mika Zibanejad if they don't lack a real competitive drive and, you know, a desire to be as good as you can be. So I think that's another good example. I mean, that's an observation on your part, right? But think about it. This is a guy that's one of the very best centers in the league. That's not an accident, you know, right. And there's a reason why he has gotten to that level. So, you know, I think those are things you learn. Like I learned as a scout, and I know talking to some of the guys, and, you know, I like to reference him every once in a while, Ace Bailey, who perished in 9/11. He was on one of the planes, and Ace was a scout for the LA Kings. And, you know, again, I was a young guy coming in, or probably in my early 30s, right? So, but I was a nobody there. Like I was not a former player, a former manager, a former coach. I mean, I had no connection other than I was just a hockey kind of, you know, I was a rink rat. And so he was a wonderful guy because he was willing to, you know, welcome me in. Talk because we'd see each other every day. Like there's a game in New York today, New Jersey tomorrow, Philly Thursday. I mean, you see these guys all the time. And he was among the people that really was just a welcoming and wonderful person. And, you know, you learn a lot. And it was such a sad day when I heard that, you know, he perished in that crash. And, you know, I know Wayne Gretzky had a great relationship with Ace from time in Edmonton. And, you know, so those were the guys. I mean, even like Scotty Bowman had a brother, Jack Bowman, that scouted, I think, for Buffalo. And you talk about polar opposites. Like, Jack Bowman was this smiling, friendly, kind of just always a smile on his face guy. And like, Scotty can be very funny and nice and engaging, but Scotty's intense. And Scotty's always, you know, he's Machiavellian. He's always thinking. And there were two guys, they were brothers, completely different. So, I mean, and Jack was another guy who was great to see at the rink. There were so many of them, but Ace Bailey was the one guy that I would say that stood out, that really welcomed me and made me, you know, feel like I belonged in that press box. And I learned a lot from all those guys.
So,
I mean, we discussed a lot on the show about, I mean, well, we wonder more so like what goes on in like GM meetings with the coach. I mean, I'm not saying you were in any of these meetings as a scout, but I mean, what's the hierarchy? Does the coach have anything to do with like the drafting process, or like is the GM communicating like what kind of skill or what kind of players he's going after? I mean, can you take us through any of that?
I learned from listening to guys, but I mean, you're right. I was not in any of those meetings. So I always try to tell people, you know, I give you what I did and what I didn't do, right? I'm not going to be one of those guys that said I, you know, blow my own horn about things I didn't do. But this is what I can tell you. My own experience is that in good organizations, it starts from the top down. The ownership is good. They hire good people. They let those people do their jobs. You have a identity, like a philosophy. Who are we? You know, like the Detroit Red Wings, you know, in the 90s were like, the Detroit Red Wings were a team that was a skill team. That's who they were. And that's who they wanted to be. So when they get to the draft and they're picking in the fourth round and there's two players, they're going to, when it comes down to it, they're going to side with the skill guy because that's who they are. That's who they want to be. And I think that's where philosophy really helps you in terms, because there's identifying players in the draft, it's a crapshoot. But if you know who you are and what type of team you want to be, it helps you make those decisions. So, you know, that's one thing. I think all the teams do things differently. You know, I think certain coaches have a little bit more say in things. The coaches almost have, you know, they really have almost no impact on drafting. They don't see those players. It's not really their place. That's something for the scouts and the scouting director and then eventually the general manager to come in. I've always felt like a good amateur scouting room is where the amateur scouts do their job. They come back, you meet with the managers, they all kind of have their moments. The scouts will bang their fists on the table for certain players, and then you hash it out, you make your list, you get to the draft, and then the manager trades all the picks and you're screwed anyway. But the bottom line is that, you know, like, I know that you know, a good story that's been well documented was in Tampa with Braden Point, where he was, I think, a third round pick, and Tampa traded up to get the pick. And you know, the story goes that the Minnesota Wild had the pick and they were willing to trade the pick. But the general manager at the time was Chuck Fletcher. And Chuck asked Steve Yzerman, I'll trade you the pick. I'm just curious who you're going to take. And Steve told him Braden Point, and you know, he was, you know, they liked him, but not enough not to consider moving it, because the teams have multiple players on their list. Then it's, well, if we have somebody that's comparable, let's trade the pick, get another pick, and then draft a different player. But that was a case where the scout in that region for Tampa really liked Braden Point, and so much so that the team was willing to trade up to get him. And the rest is history. He's been a great player for them. So, you know, that's kind of the way it works. And again, everyone is a little different. Every team does it a little differently. Analytics are a big part of things now. Video scouting has become a big part of things. But I mean, that's the area where I think teams probably should, you know, spend as much as they can, because drafting and developing players, I mean, look at the teams that win. Most of the time, it's because they've drafted good players.
Do you think there's communication, like in the Rangers case, when they were going to get Tarasenko and they were going to get Kane? Do you think Drury goes to Gallant and say, what do you think? And is there a discussion like that? Or is the GM just saying, we're getting this guy's, make it work?
I think that I would think there should be that kind of conversation.
I do too, but
yeah, and I don't listen. And there may have been. I don't know if there was or there wasn't. I would think there would be at least some kind of discussion at the very end of that conversation. Like, you know, we're on the verge. What do you think? And that's kind of a group decision, I would think. Like, you know, like I think Drury probably has some of the guys that work for him are like really close, that he really relies on their thoughts, right? It's like all of us. We have people that when it's crunch time, we ask certain people their opinions, and we value that advice. And I'm sure that Chris has people in the organization that he feels that way about, and they discuss it. I got to think that Gerard was probably part of that in some way. But again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know one way or the other, because I don't.
I know.
You think that's still possibly Glenn Sather, even though he's retired for Chris Drury?
Well, Glenn Sather is still around. I mean, I did not see him, unfortunately. I heard he was at game five at the Rock. He was there that night, and it was disappointing that I didn't run into him, because I don't have any kind of long relationship with Glenn Sather, believe me. But, you know, but I know him enough, and he's kind of he's such a character in the game. And I've gotten older. I kind of respect, you know, guys who have had these kind of careers. So it would have been kind of nice to run into him. I would, you know, Glenn is not a shrinking violet. So I'm sure, you know, and I know Glenn has always had and enjoyed a very good relationship with the owner. So, you know, I'm sure if there's, you know, if Chris is looking for an opinion, I'm sure he would, you know, that would be one guy that he might ask, and might be one guy that's involved anyway. So, I mean, the fact that he was at the game tells you that he's, you know, I'm sure he wasn't there just, you know, looking to meet me to buy a popcorn and a soda. So, you know, I mean, it's fascinating that goes on within all these sports teams, because there's so many things that there's things that we learn, there's things that we know, and then there's a lot of things that we don't know.
Wow, that's great. So, I mean, you touched on a little bit making your transition to the ESPN, the magazine. Yeah. I mean, how long was that career? And did you see it starting to transition away from people reading magazines to more social media and television? Or did you kind of just fall into your television career as well?
Yeah, you know, it was a similar thing, guys, with, like I said before about scouting, is I like to bet on myself, because, you know, nobody else is going to bet on you. You got to bet on yourself sometimes. And so I was fortunate enough to be at ESPN Magazine at a time when ESPN.com was coming into existence. And obviously they already had the television venues, but they were, you know, ESPN2 was still relatively new, and ESPN News was on the horizon, and ESPN Radio was something that was out there. So I always really had this desire to do television work. And, so I said to my bosses, like, listen, I would love to do some TV. You don't have to pay me. Just let's figure out, like, if I have any expenses. But, like, the same kind of thing. And if you like what I'm doing on television and I like doing it, we'll continue. And then maybe after a year we could discuss if there's money here. And so that's pretty much what happened. And I got to do more and more TV. ESPN News came into existence. I started doing regular hits on ESPN News during the day. And over time, they started paying me first per hit. And then over time, they made it part of my salary and part of my job. And, like, you know, now you see so many guys that work across all those platforms on ESPN. It's kind of commonplace now. But I think in the time that I was doing it, I was among the first, you know, to really have a magazine. I could have a magazine story, a web story. I could do radio hits and do a TV hit all in the same day. And so, you know, it was kind of, that's one of those things. I don't know if, you know, because hockey was never like the big flashpoint at ESPN at any time. So I don't know if that was something that really, yeah, I mean, that's not really, like, it wasn't something that I think was widely known, maybe. But when I look back at it, I mean, there was a handful of guys that were doing that at that time, and I was one of them. So it's a kind of a thing I'm proud of.
You should be. I look at you.
Absolutely.
I was reading about it, and it was almost like you're a pioneer for ESPN and hockey. And I mean, that's definitely something to be proud of, especially now they made the big deal again.
Yep.
And going to be hosting the NHL for years to come.
Yeah, they had a lot of, you know, when I got there, they had a lot of good people that were already working there. I mean, Al Morganti, who's in the Hockey Hall of Fame, was one of their insiders. And, you know, they had a whole, Doc Emmerich was doing games there. And he obviously had a long and terrific career on many different broadcast outlets for a long time. And they had a lot of guys who were good hockey guys. And some guys that started their career there, there were players. I remember Kevin Weeks was a player and a young player at the time. And there's pictures of me sitting on the set of NHL Tonight with John Buchegras, Kevin Weeks, and myself, which is kind of crazy to think here we are, you know, years and years later. But, you know, there was a lot of good hockey people there at that time. And, you know, I was fortunate to get that opportunity to be one of them.
Can you know, you blow up that photo for us and get everyone to sign it? That'd be a nice
me. It's not high resolution, so I don't know how much
I can
blow it up.
But that's okay.
I got to find it. It's out there, though, because I've seen it. I think it's like a video, and I have to kind of stop the video to see the three of us sitting there. It's kind of – it is funny, though, to me. You know.
I guess you have a home now. Go ahead, Coach.
I have an X's and O's question for you, EJ, because watching all these playoff analysts,
yeah,
it's something that drives me crazy, especially watching the Rangers so much. Okay. Almost every analyst is saying that during the playoffs, you have to get away from this East-West game and get pucks deep and do this. What prevents these stars watching Toronto from not doing this? Watching Panarin, I don't understand how as hockey players and their hockey IQ was high that they can't get it. What's your opinion on that?
Well, my opinion is this, is like people are who they are at the end of the day. And like a guy like Artemi Panarin is a really artistic hockey player, right? Like he's a guy that sees the game differently than you or I. And maybe he wants to play the game differently. And he's had a lot of success playing the game that way. And it's hard, I think, sometimes for players like that to change their stripes because the situation is different. Like the smart ones will figure it out and you know, maybe they understand that maybe it's just more of a chip and chase game and make it, you know, like you said, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, even in, you know, it's funny. I just recently played in one of these old man hockey tournaments and the game got competitive late and I'm trying. And I was, I think, better than the couple of guys I was playing against. And I came to the blue line and I tried to go around the guy. But when the games are really competitive, what happens? You get hacked. You get whacked, you get grabbed because people are competing, right? So my point in saying that is at any level, when the games are competitive like that, when you try to get too cute, you turn the puck over in bad areas of the ice, leads to transition against your team and problems. So I can remember going back to the bench. This is like 2 weeks ago. And I go back to the bench and my line mate, I said, I think from here on out, I'm dumping the puck in because the rest of this game is going to be hack and whack and battle. There's no sense in me trying to think I'm, you know, something I'm not. Let's get it in. So I think at the NHL level, though, these guys are so highly skilled. Panarin is so highly skilled. And some of these other guys are so highly skilled. They think, and this is why they're great, right? Because they think they can always make these plays. And a lot of times they do. But to your point, it is a little baffling sometimes. Like, why can't they realize that, like, no, this isn't the time for that? And
wait for the opening.
Yeah, sometimes it takes time to learn that. I mean, I'm watching Jack Eichel right now with Vegas, and I've been really impressed with the growth in Jack Eichel's game this year because we did a whole tape on it last week. He is playing the 200-foot game right now.
Yeah.
He is playing smart. And this is a wonderfully skilled guy. And when he's got a chip on his shoulder, he can do it. But I think you're right. He's a little bit probably wants something to prove first time in the playoffs. I think Bruce Cassidy has done a wonderful job with that team. And he's got Jack bought into what they want to do. And I've been really impressed. So Coach Ed, I mean – it's frustrating. I would agree with you when you watch. You probably shake your head. But, again, these guys are so talented, they probably think they can make the play. And, you know, sometimes you got to learn the hard way. And that's why you see teams. What do we always hear? You got to lose before you learn how to win. And some guys figure it out, and some guys don't.
I get that, but he should have learned that from last year's playoff.
You think you would think
that's
so.
What I'm saying. and I know I would be hard pressed to not believe that Gallant didn't like say, come on, we have to dump it in. Stop giving it away. I mean, as a coach, he had to be going crazy.
See, that's the thing when you get to coaching, right? Because Barry Melrose told me this years ago, and it was really, I say to this day, I still use this because it's great, and I think you'll appreciate what it means. It's not what you say. It's what they hear. So for Gallant, right? Like, you're right. I'm sure Gerard Gallant said it in many different ways. But if he cannot reach that player to the extent to get him to understand that, it doesn't matter. Like, Gerard knows, we all know. We're sitting here having this conversation, right? We right. know. But at the end of the day, Artemi Panarin is a brilliant hockey player, and he's had all kinds of success in his life doing it his way. So you have to find a way to communicate that so that he hears you.
Yeah.
And to this point, that has not happened for whatever reason. So we'll see.
I thought Tarasenko coming in was going to get him to that level to say, you know, yeah. come on, bud, let's go. This is what we yeah. need to do. And I was still shocked that it still wasn't. He was doing better at it, but, you know, whatever. In my opinion, yeah. not enough.
Yeah, no, listen, he was, I can tell you, my just watching, I'll give you my opinion, the same as yours. I just didn't think that there was enough there. I mean, he's an important piece of the puzzle. He's a very well-paid guy. He was was he the leading scorer this year? I mean, he was right there, right, for the Rangers?
Yeah, he led them in points.
So there you go. I mean, like, this is someone that's got to produce in those spots. And, I mean, I think you guys watched the games. You were probably more impressed with Jack Hughes' ability to play north-south than you were with Artemi Panarin, and that's a much younger player. So
don't rub the salt in there. Come on.
Well, you know, I don't mean to, but like,
no, I'm just kidding.
He's gonna have to learn at some point, but it's gonna be whoever comes in next to coach. That's going to be part of the job, is to be able to create that communication to the point where Panarin will make that change in his game. And he's not the only one who's gone through this in his career. All kinds of
players have gone
through this. Yeah. So,
well, let me ask you. So after last year, there were some rumblings that Drury wasn't happy with Panarin's playoffs. Yeah. And Panarin even, I don't know if you remember or saw it, but he did an interview in the Russian media where he said, trade me. Like, I have a no move clause. Like, they can't trade me. You know, he's always joking around. But I wonder, you know, again, if Drury is just not happy with Panarin. I mean, he didn't sign Panarin to that contract. He inherited that contract.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there's anything there. I mean, do you think the Rangers want to do that? I'm not asking you for inside info. Yeah. But
I would just say this. Chris Drury was part of the Rangers management team when they signed him.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, now he didn't have the final call. So I don't know. Again, you'd have to ask Chris what he thinks. I mean, when you're trying to build a winning team, you build it through the middle. You build it through your centers and your defense and then your goaltender. And your wingers, to me, are more complementary pieces. Now, you need to have guys that can provide offense. And there's, you know, those are not – I'm not trying to downgrade the impact that wingers have. I mean, you see what the impact they have on a lot of different teams. Kucherov, for example, in Tampa. You know, for one, you know, you can go through all kinds of them over the years, but
Patrick Kane.
Yeah, exactly. In Chicago, but Taze, right? Number one center, you know, you just look through all the winners over the years. The number one center is really a key piece of the puzzle. So, you know, Panarin gets paid a lot of money. Unfortunately, as we know, right, nobody could predict the worldwide pandemic where the salary cap kind of flattened out and we're hoping that revenues rise. It's created problems for all teams, have challenges, thinking, you know, like the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm sure thought the cap was going to go up more and support some of the things they did. Now they're kind of in a bind. So it's going to take time for that to change. But to me, when I look at the Rangers before the season, I thought they would win the Stanley Cup. You got into the playoffs at the end of the regular season. I really like the Edmonton Oilers, and they're both sitting at home. Right. So, it's hard to predict. As I said at the start, there's a lot of randomness in hockey, matchups, injuries, goalies that come into play here. And for the Rangers, I like a lot of things about their roster, but the thing that I came back to a little bit was that it seems like to me they have nine top six forwards. And so, and by that, I mean, those three guys, that kid line, those guys are all high draft picks. Those guys are meant to be top six players. So at some point in time, I think Drury is going to have to, you know, have to look at that and figure out which guys you're keeping, which guys you're moving. They're in a weird spot because they have that Panarin, Kreider, Trouba, Zibanejad kind of group that's in like 30-ish, right? And then you have that younger group of, you know, Fox and the kid line and some others that are younger players. So, Miller. You know, yeah, exactly. Miller, Schneider. I mean, so you're going to have, they're going to have to kind of, you know, figure it out. I always feel like the hardest part of being a manager in any sport, and certainly in this sport, it's relatively easy to go up there and say, with the first pick, we take Connor McDavid or we take whoever.
You think that.
The hard part, you know, sometimes you can get that wrong, but the hard part to me is putting those last pieces in place. And I thought, I always use the example what Tampa did when they went out and got Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow. They traded away significant assets to get those players. But in the end, those were players that really fit what they needed to complete the puzzle. And in the end, you got to give Julian Brisbois a lot of credit. And, you know, they went on a run, won a couple of cups, went to three straight finals. But, you know, those are the pieces. It is so hard to figure that out. And a lot of teams don't ever figure that out.
Yeah, I feel like Drury did that last year, getting Kopp and Justin Braun and, you know, some different pieces.
More role players, not right. Stars, right? This year you brought in stars. And sometimes, you know, Bruce Boudreau, to his credit, right, the longtime coach, works with us at NHL Network, terrific person. And he was one of the few guys who was down on the Patrick Kane thing. He just said, you know, I just don't know. There's only one puck. And that was his take on it, you know, that they had a lot of star players. And in the end, you know, they didn't win. So if they won, everybody would say it was a great move, right? In the end, it's whether you win or you don't win. But, you know, I can remember Bruce talking about that. And you know, when you think back, like Andrew Kopp was a real valuable player for the Rangers last year, just like a guy like this year in Vegas who's been a valuable player is the Russian kid they got from St. Barbashev. Thank you, right? So he's been a valuable asset. Like Max Domi has been a helpful player for Dallas. I mean, sometimes it's those role players that come in and help you.
Most of the time, I would say.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask you about Kako and Lafreniere while I have you here.
All right.
Particularly those two, because I'm pretty happy with Hedel, even though Coach Ed isn't. But you know, so there's a lot of,
come on, Coach Ed, come on.
There's a lot of fans out there that are, you know, calling them busts, and obviously they're 21 and 22 years old. I mean, you made the point, there's nine top six forwards, there's not a lot of ice time, there's only one puck. You know, I'm just curious your take on those two players and where they're at in their careers, and you know, whether the Rangers are even going to commit to them at this point. I think that's a fair question.
Well, I think that that's an internal decision. They're going to have to figure that out, what they want to do moving forward, cap-wise and everything. I don't think they're going to move away from them. I mean, they're really talented young guys. You know, normally players like that end up being drafted by teams that don't have as deep a team. So they play in all those situations and they have a chance, you know, to be on the power play consistently and put up points in that role and gain confidence. And, you know, maybe they don't play as well defensively. They're still learning that aspect of the game. The teams they're on aren't that good, but they're building blocks to the future for that particular franchise. In this case, you know, the Rangers kind of accelerated that rebuild dramatically with Panarin and Trouba and other players. And so they're in a little bit of a different circumstance. It's a good circumstance in the standpoint of they're playing in meaningful games and they're learning that. But like Kako, I think, talked in his exit interview about like needing to be on the power play more and thinking it's time in his career for more of those things. And like, those are the pressures those guys feel internally, because like you, they know where they were drafted and they know what the expectations are. They have high expectations for themselves. So, you know, they want to be in those situations where they can put up some offensive numbers and live up to what the expectations are. So I think it's a really difficult call right now.
And get paid too, right? I mean,
yeah, I just think it's a difficult call to determine where those guys are exactly are. I've seen flashes from both guys. I didn't really think I wasn't really excited by Lafreniere's playoffs this year. But you know what? They're awfully young. And I think, you know, internally the Rangers are going to have those discussions, and then they're going to have to make some hard decisions one way or another. But again, I don't think it's really – those guys are – they're top six type players, right? So I think that's the role they need to be in. And if they're not going to be in that role, I don't know if they're going to fit as third line type players. So those are hard decisions that Chris Drury is going to have to make, especially because of cap challenges and what you want to do with other pieces.
So with that, do you think that they go with another experienced coach to kind of guide the kids or hopefully give them a little bit more playing time? Or do you think they're coming in with some new blood?
I got to listen. They hired David Quinn right before they hired Gerard Gallant. So David Quinn was a first-time NHL head coach. He had been coaching in college. You know, to be fair to David, they went into the rebuild there, and so it was a different circumstance, and then they moved him out. And then they brought in Gerard, who's a real experienced guy. I got to think with the team they have, they expect to be competing for a Stanley Cup. And I think it's hard to ask, like, Chris Knobloch, for example. We're going to, you know, turn it over to Chris Knobloch in his first NHL head coaching job and say, like, we trust that he's going to be able to be ready to go and take this team where it wants to go. Now, he may or may not become a really good NHL coach. He was a guy that had a promising junior career and has coached in the minors now, and he's had some success. But it seems to me, I would think that they're going to more than likely look at an experienced guy and maybe a guy that has that Stanley Cup resume. And then you start to think of those guys, who they are, and it's, you know, Laviolette, and Mike Babcock, and it's Joel Quenneville. And, you know, we know, like, you know, they say they're not interested in Quenneville at this point, or not going to pursue him, and he's got his own circumstance where he has to get clearance basically from the league to come back. So that could take time. I don't think anything is going to happen with that until at least July. So, you know, and it's hard to say if he'll ever get reinstated. I have no idea. That's up to the league office. So, I mean, I think if I was, you know, going to bet on it, I would think they're going to hire somebody with experience just because of where their team is at. But I can't say for sure because, you know, maybe Chris feels like, and maybe management feels like, hey, we really like Chris Knobloch. We think he's ready to do this. But I think it's a lot to ask because, as you just seen with Gerard Gallant, had a lot of success. Didn't last very long. So the clock is ticking because some of the guys they have there that are important players, now is the time.
Yeah. Oh, I'd rather them go for a guy like Brunette or Jay Leach in Seattle or something like that versus.
Well, that would be I just think, you know, not that it's not possible that they do it. I just think that it's a lot to ask for somebody to come in and with that kind of, you know, with those kind of expectations, you know. And maybe, listen, Mike Sullivan's another guy. Everybody's been talking about whether things stayed status quo in Pittsburgh, and you know, if he becomes available, he had been there with the Rangers with John Tortorella during his tenure. So Mike has won Stanley Cup. So, I mean, I think that, you know, if I'm Chris, to be honest with you, I'm not in a rush. I think I'm looking through the process and trying to feel who I feel most confident with. And looking back, I would look back and say, okay, what were the things? Why did I want to move off Gerard despite success? What are the things I'm looking for? And I would look to whatever those things are, that's what they need to find in the next head coach of the New York Rangers. So we'll see if that person, whoever that person is and what the decision is, but whoever it is, they come into a situation where the expectation is to win.
Yeah. Yeah. It better be.
Yeah.
Well,
it is.
EJ. EJ, we really appreciate your time, man. It's we can keep you here all night and chat about the Rangers and the league. Yeah. You know, just the final four bracket, you know, just league wide, not off the Rangers. Did anyone, you know, predict this final four bracket?
No, nobody that I know. I mean, I'm sure that somebody, they know all these brackets now. I'm sure we can dig up a bracket somewhere where somebody put it together, probably like a 6-year-old boy or something, or girl put it together in crayon and boom. And, you know, they'll be on NHL Now next week, and I'll be, you know, I'll be in romper room or something. But, yeah, you know, it's a humbling thing. You know, we got to take these picks. And like last year I had a really good playoffs. I was 13 out of 15 with my picks, and I had Colorado over Tampa in the final, and this year, I mean, I got nobody left. Everybody got beat out, and
same here.
But that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is, and that's why we love the game so much, because it's tight, it's close, night after night after night, and I try to tell people there is just a hair of difference between teams that miss the playoffs and teams that eventually win the Stanley Cup. And in a 7-game series, when you get a hot goalie or you get a matchup that favors you, you never know how it's going to play out. So
who do you think's going to win?
Four. Yeah, it's like I said, my picks have been terrible, so I don't know who I want to jinx, but you know, I'll give you the media. I'll give you the media perspective. We're always looking for whatever, like, the best flights are, right? Like, the good, you know, at least for me, because we're going to travel back and forth, right? So
Vegas.
Right away, I got to take Carolina out, because it's too hard to fly in and out of Raleigh, because you got to connect everywhere. So if we're in Florida, you got St. Pete, you got Fort Lauderdale Airport, you got West Palm, and you got Miami. So you got three shots at getting out. In the West, it doesn't matter as much, because there's plenty. I think there's enough flights into Dallas and into Vegas. So, you know, from that standpoint, that would be easier. But like Florida and Carolina, like, that's a toss-up. I mean, like, you know, like, Carolina has had the easier path, because the Islanders don't score a lot. And then the Devils were coming off that series with the Rangers, and they're inexperienced, and they had some goaltending issues. And Carolina, nothing against them. They're a hardened group. And so they took advantage of those situations. I think they're going to face a much stiffer test here in a Florida team that is really feeling their way right now, and their goalie's playing well. I think it really comes down to Florida's forecheck against Carolina's defense, and whoever wins that battle. And if Bobrovsky plays well, that helps Florida. So, you know, I think Florida's got a great chance to win that series. And then the other one, I mean, I love the way Vegas is playing right now. But Pete DeBoer, in his first year in places, Fizer gets his way into the final, it seems like. He's done it two other places. So I think that's a toss-up. That'll be a great series.
And a lot of good hockey left, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's it, huh?
We appreciate it.
Wait, EJ, I have one final question. First of all, you realize the three Eds, we all have the same two initials. We have all three of us, EJ as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And secondly, the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Who's responsible for the wardrobe on the NHL Network?
Okay. Why? Are you down on my wardrobe?
Not just you. I mean, I look at Dubnyk. I look at guys coming out, open collar, no collar, this, that. What's going on over there? I don't
know. He wants everyone to look like Henrik Lundqvist. He was spoiled over here.
You know,
that's impossible, first of all.
That is impossible. Even his twin brother doesn't look as good as him. I mean, that's think about that. Poor Joel. Poor Joel Lundqvist.
That's hilarious.
Our show, we do a more relaxed thing now, so some days, I mean, I'm wearing all kinds of stuff this year, so it's all new for me, and I'm enjoying it. It's getting mixed reviews. I'll just have to live with those mixed reviews.
No,
so,
EJ,
Coach Ed, I'm going to work on my game for you.
Do you guys give each other
digs? Who's dressing how? You know, because I'm looking at him like, you got to be. If I walk into my game with Eddie, he'll be like, "Dad, what are you wearing? What are you doing?" You know.
Well, you know what. It's not like the guys who do the night show, they all wear, you know, we wear a suit, we wear a jacket and tie for NHL Tonight. So sometimes I'll do both shows and I'll be in like an open collar, and then I go back and I change and I put a tie on for that. But
see, they're going for the casual.
I like they've allowed us to be more casual. Like, you see a lot of shows, right? If you watch the sports shows on other networks, there's a lot of that now. And I don't know. We're a conversational show, so I think it's like it makes sense for us to be in a more relaxed setting, but
more laid back.
You know, and if you have any suggestions, Coach Ed, send them along.
Don't take any fashion advice from Coach Ed, EJ. Trust me.
Are you saying Coach Ed is not Yves Saint Laurent?
Only my golf attire is up to par.
Yeah. No pun intended. But if you want to get your Instagram, if you want to get your Instagram followers up, you should start posting your outfits like Jackie does, you know, just to maybe give her some digs. And, you know, I think your followers would go up as well.
I got a feeling that just would not work as well. I don't know what tells me.
Well, yours might be more from a comedic standpoint, EJ.
Yes,
you know, so.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, we love you, buddy. And thank you so much for coming on.
I'll see you guys at the Garden.
Yeah,
we sure will.
I mean, absolutely. We have our season ticket relocation event tomorrow, so it looks like we might have to just keep our tickets so we're close to you. So we'll see.
Hey, listen, that would be lovely.
Yeah.
But do what you think is best. I mean, you could always come up.
True. Very true.
Exactly.
We'll see what happens.
All right. All right. Well, EJ, stay in touch, boys.
If you ever go over your voucher, I'll cover you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. $25. It runs out fast at MSG.
I know.
It's only exactly. One box of popcorn if you're lucky.
You're done.
Keep up the good work. I love you guys on the show.
All right, thanks, guys. Really, you're the really best. Appreciate it. Good luck with everything. Stay in touch.
Of course,
thanks.
We will. Thank you so much.
Thanks, EJ.
All right. See ya.
Well, that was awesome. So
what a regular guy.
Yeah, we can't thank EJ enough for coming on. That was just incredible. I mean, we could, like you said, cuz we could have talked to him for hours. He just wanted to hang with us. It was great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wanted to add on at the end and tell him that, you know, I live in Miami, and if the Panthers make it, I'll go to a game and meet up with him. But I felt so bad that we just kept him for an hour and change. I'm like, all right, I got to let this guy go. Just let him know via email or something.
He said keep in touch. So if you do go to a game, I'll shoot him a message, and I'm sure he'll respond. He'd love to hang out.
Yeah, for sure. No, just a great guy. $25
in Florida goes a lot longer, a lot further.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting career too. You know, it's like he really was in the media. He was in the business side. He was a coach. He played in college. You know, he still plays. Just a really interesting career. I think it's a unique career. And he should be proud of it. You know, I think he is from what he says, but it's an impressive career. You know.
Yeah,
I mean, his career is watching and analyzing hockey.
Can't get much better than that, right?
I mean, come on.
Yeah, but he had to earn that, you know.
Without a doubt. But I'm saying he took a lot of chances. Like he said, he bet on himself, and he just kept pushing. And, you know, it's not an easy career path, but he did it. You know, I think he's very entertaining. I love his you know, sometimes I agree, sometimes I disagree, like you said. But he's just
hey, appreciate that as well.
You got to get up in the attic and find that blue book.
I'm telling you, I have a bunch of programs from my father. I got to see if I have it up there. I got to find.
He said 1968 blue book. So I meant to ask him, is that 1967, 68 or 1968, 69?
You have such a.
Such a stick.
What?
Yeah.
No, I just didn't know. I mean, how, you know.
So he's older than me. He's actually your father's age.
Yeah.
Because my dad's 68, he was 8 years old.
He may have just broke his age on our show, because every Google you have, you can't find how old he is. So,
all right, well,
it's actually not... things like. So we might have to cut that. He might text me, "Yo, cut that part out.
Cut my age out."
He's trying to stay mysterious.
I think that would be a great podcast with Jackie Redmond doing the Leafs. She's very clearly a passionate Leaf fan. That would be good for her. So that was an interesting point too.
I saw the sister. The sister's crazier than her.
Her sister.
As far as being
her sister.
Whatever. Whatever it is. I watched the second one where they had her prediction on what the Leafs need to do. And she was like, she had the jersey on. She's ready to kill somebody. This guy's got to do this. This guy's got to do that.
Oh, like passionate. Like she's passionate.
Yeah. Gotcha. No, but she was very specific. Great. She was very specific about what each player needed to do. It wasn't like the Leafs need to do this, you know.
Yeah,
it was pretty good.
Jackie's a very busy woman. She does a lot, WWE, MLB stuff, NHL, you name it. So podcasting might not be on her to-do list, but who knows?
We'll get Jackie on this podcast. She's going to come on this podcast.
Yeah, EJ might put a good word in for us.
And then after that interview, I'm just going to retire.
We're going to go out on top.
That'll be the last episode of the podcast. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. So, Coach, curious your reaction to EJ's thoughts that the Rangers will probably, and obviously he was, you know, he qualified it, but probably hire an experienced coach because the goal is to win the Stanley Cup versus, you know, we talked about this in the last episode. So I'm just curious I didn't really hear your reaction to that when he said it. So,
well, I was going to step in and say Colorado's coach Bednar was just a minor league coach when they hired him. And in 2 years, he won the cup. I mean, I think they could hire someone like Knobloch. I think Drury likes him. He was on the bench with him during Quinn's COVID tenure. And if they surround him with experienced assistant coaches, I don't see why it can't work.
Was it only 2 years with Colorado and Bednar?
I believe in his second year they won. It might have been
three. Where did they hire?
I think it was. I'm not trying to call you out, but I think it was three because I remember them saying that McKinnon lost like two first round exits or something. So I don't know.
It might have been his third year, but either way. He won at the junior level national championship. Then he won the AHL.
Yeah.
And then they hired him.
Yep.
I just don't think
the Rangers have 2 years.
Bednar, interesting. I just looked it up. So he was the ECHL assistant for 5 years, then head coach in the ECHL for two, won the championship, then got promoted to the AHL, where he was a head coach and assistant coach periodically for like 6 years, won the AHL championship, and then he moved up to Colorado. First year, they missed the playoffs, and then the next four seasons, they lost. So it was in his sixth season.
Wow, that long? I'm standing corrected.
I think he was one of the only coaches to ever do that, win it at every professional level or something like
that. Yeah, he won the championship as a head coach at all three professional level, North American professional levels.
But he also came into Colorado when they're rebuilding, right? It wasn't when they were prominent.
He also played for the Anaheim Bullfrogs in 1995, which is a roller hockey team. it's on his hockey database page. I'm going to look up Mikey Producci's to see what his stats were this year with the Wet Bandits.
Well, that might be that's probably a professional team out in California. They take the roller hockey very seriously out there.
Yeah, probably. Probably. So, listen, EJ had a lot of good insight. If
it's
listed,
I'm sure it's got to be. I want Wet Bandits on my Hockey DB.
Yeah, we got to get on Hockey DB. I want, you know, whatever. I'm just messing around. So, I liked his insight on Panarin. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And also on the Kako and Lafreniere stuff. You know, Coach, I think he's a Hedl guy based on that reaction as well. He's like, come on, coach.
I didn't say I agree with everything he does. I said I like his analysis on the show. I think he's very fair. I didn't say I agree with him.
Yeah. Coach is very adamant about
it. I thought he was very, very good story, very inspirational. He had a lot of good quotes.
He gave me a lot of clippable things
for the Instagram and social network.
Imagine all the things he has seen, like just behind the scenes. Like, we look at meeting him like he looks at running into Glenn Sather or running into certain people. You know what I mean?
Yep. The Neil Smith story was cool. That was cool.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask him after that. When you spoke to Neil Smith, ask him this in person. Did you ask him why he traded Sergei Zubov for Ulf Samuelsson? Did you ask him that question?
Listen, Costanza, Mr. Costanza. You traded Jay
Buse. How could you trade Sergei Zubov? And then he even mentioned Zubov. It was like he was baiting us to, like, I wanted to, like, be like, why did you keep bringing up Zubov?
I know you are boiling. Your blood just boils every time certain things are mentioned. I'm like, oh, boy, here we go.
Don't bring up Sergei Zubov, please. Anyway, all right, boys. Great job, Ed. Great job connecting with EJ. It was a lot of fun. Coach, you too. It was a great interview. And EJ, again, thank you for coming on. And, you know, we're really appreciative of your time. I know you're a busy guy and you didn't have to spend an hour on a Tuesday BSing with a bunch of New Yorkers. I'm sure it's the last thing you wanted to do. But thank you for doing it. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Especially as an Islander fan.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
And how about that little story as an 8-year-old, like just turning the page on the Rangers, like pissed off.
Mad. Well, $5 in 1968 is quite a bit, I think. But you guys don't understand
that also. I think I told you guys the story. The programs used to send it. What's that?
The programs are like $5 now.
No, they're like $12. No,
they're like 20 bucks almost.
No, but like when I was a kid, you would send in like a picture of, say, Ron Duguay and mail it to Madison Square Garden, the address, and you would hope that and sometimes the guy signed it and sent it back. Sometimes they didn't, you know, but you just wung it. And that's how it was back then. You put a stamp on it.
Can you imagine just being a player and just getting like a ton of envelopes with your picture inside and no other context? All right, sign to send it back.
No, you used to write a little note. Can I have your autograph? Blah, blah, blah. And you used to send like a hockey card too. I did that a couple of times. I don't remember ever getting one back, but you used to send in a hockey card to try to get an autograph.
Yeah, there's some guy at MSG who's got a great hockey card collection. He stole all the hockey cards that you dumb kids would mail in.
The players are like, how come I haven't gotten any fan mail? The guy's got his whole wall in his house. He'll be on the MSG commercial with the Ranger room.
That's funny. Anyway.
Yeah.
So thanks again to EJ for coming on. We're gonna do our off season preview soon, as well as a end of year awards episode coming up. So fans, keep an eye out for that. And yeah, we're trying to line up some more interviews, give you some content over the summer. Obviously, we're just waiting for the season to end at this point. So it's at least we get to watch some playoff hockey without stress. It's not that I want that, but I can at least take solace that it's exciting to watch the games without being like, on the edge of my seat, worried about every little chip out of the zone.
We've been saying that for like almost 10 years now.
I know.
So now it's time to be stressed.
Right.
No, I hear you. I don't want to do that, but I'm trying to get positive about it.
No, it is.
You always tell
enjoyable.
Me I'm too negative. You tell me I'm too negative. I'm trying to be positive.
Last night I was watching the Dallas game, and the game was over, and Kathy's like, "Oh, what's the matter? You upset? Who won?" I said, "No, it was a great game. I just wanted to see a great game, and that was it. It wasn't like, oh shit, I went to bed like they lost, you know."
Yeah, for sure.
That's how EJ probably feels every day.
Yeah. All right, boys, let's wrap
love
it up,
you guys.
All right, guys.
Love you guys. We'll talk soon.
Love you guys.
Hope you guys enjoy.
Great
this
job. Have a good night.
Thanks again, EJ.
Thanks, EJ. Good luck with everything.